What's up, everybody? Welcome back. Another episode. Some crazy numbers on the last couple, which was awesome to see. Even like some really good digits on the ones that weren't fishing or outdoor related. So that's pretty cool. I'm putting some of the filmed ones on YouTube if you want to check out a visual representation of them. They're not the greatest because it's all sort of ad hoc and I'm limited to gear when I travel. A lot of those episodes are shot all over in Thailand, so limited to camera equipment and all that sort of stuff, so not the best quality. But anyway, this episode is on YouTube and it features George Hickman. George is an American wrestler who, who moved to Thailand a number of years ago and now is the head coach at Bang Tao Muay Thai and MMA, a very prestigious martial arts gym, and it's only a bit over a year old, 18 months old or something. Crazy busy. Like, I've been over there a couple of times now, shooting a few different jobs and bits and pieces, and it is pumping the amount of people that come through there from all over the world, all from like basic beginner people that just want to do camps all the way to like elite fighters like Zhang Wei Li, who fights for UFC, trains there quite often, Alex Volkanovski, Israel Adesanya. It's crazy. And George and his brother Frank are head coaches there and co-owners at that gym. So hung out with George a fair bit while I was over there, and we talked a bit of shit, and he was nice enough to sit down and give me about an hour or so of his time and to pick his brain and chat all things fight sports and moving to Thailand, what it's like, and the fight game, and just things in general. It's just a good chat, good wholesome chat. So without further ado, I'll get stuck into it. As always, feedback is welcome and thanks so much for the support. Enjoy. Right, we are live. Man, thanks for jumping on. I really appreciate it.
Yep.
And thanks for tolerating me for the last week or so.
It's been a pleasure.
I feel like it hasn't been because I've been fucking sticking cameras in your face for days on end.
Yeah, I get good photos.
Yeah, true.
So, no complaints.
That's my compensation. I've the opportunity to talk to you is fucking awesome because I remember you. The first time I ever realized that you existed was you were on a Bellator card. You were like one of the first fights on a Bellator main card, and I cannot remember who you fought. Do you remember?
If you want to ask me, I could have told you.
Hang on. Was it Shane? Shane Crenshaw. It was you fought him twice.
I got knocked
Upchurch,
out.
Upchurch.
Yeah, Stephen Upchurch.
Yeah,
that's. I got knocked out like a year, almost around a year, the year before, in like 7 seconds.
By him?
I'm sorry?
By him or?
By him, yes.
Yeah.
He knocked me out a year before in like 7 seconds. So it was like an interesting fight camp and fight. When they called, and it was actually, I think I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure it was his coach that called me as like a local matchmaker for Bellator for the undercard. He was like, "Hey man, I don't really want to give you this fight, but they want to make it. Are you keen?" And I was like, "Say no more."
Fuck
so, yeah.
And you got the win too. And that was your last. I'm pretty sure that would have been your last fight. That was like 20. Fuck, I was only just starting to get into MMA, and I think that was like 2015 or 2016 or some shit.
I would have been before that because I moved to Thailand in 2014, so it would have been like 2013, 2012, something like that. I was well keen to get that one back.
And you got it back, which is sick. You got a rear naked choke.
Yeah.
I do remember that.
I remember before that, we're in that camp, my striking coach, Manu, he used to fight like in Thailand back in the 90s in Lumpini. And he made me change southpaw for that fight. And that was the first fight that I ever changed southpaw.
Yeah, right. And I remember them commenting, actually, of you switching stances.
Yeah,
because there was heaps of fucking leg kicks from memory too.
Yeah, I kicked a lot. Yeah. I definitely kicked a lot. But he would, like, I remember one time, because, like, in Atlanta, before I moved to Thailand, I was very lucky to have, like, you know, I had high-level training partners, yeah, guys in the UFC, guys in Bellator. And I remember, like, sparring with Douglas Lima. And he was, like,
fuck, he's no
obviously dude. He's massive anyways compared to me, but I remember him just, like, womping me, and I was, like, after, I was, like, I'm just going to fight him orthodox. And my coach was, like, okay, up to you, because he's French, Cameroonian. But yeah, he speaks, like, Fringlish, like, French, English, and Thai. And he, I remember him being, like, you're going to sleep if you don't change. And I was, like, okay. And then I changed, and, like, obviously worked out well for me. But, yeah, it was quite interesting camp.
Yeah, that's a fucking... Man, that's probably one of my earliest memories of MMA, because I came from boxing and then wanted to get into it and then found jiu-jitsu and stuff. And I remember, like, you and Frank were, like, one of the first sets of names that were ever, like, passed on to people to watch and shit. Because you were essentially, like, industry pioneers, really. Like,
I didn't say that.
But, well, I feel like MMA, like what it used to be when the UFC was, like, around and people were wearing fucking wrestling boots in the cage and gis and shit. Like,
yeah, that was, like, that's before my era.
Yeah, yeah, but your era was, like, more pure MMA, like, where it was its own sport, I think.
Yes, and now it's, like, an actual, like a high-level sport, you know? It's becoming, like, the MMA fighter. Like, when I was there, I remember, like, when people, I don't know, maybe a year or two into training, people were, like, you know, talking about not sparring hard and stuff like that. And before that, the era before me was, like, very much, you know, hard sparring and stuff like that. But now the MMA athlete is, like, you know, before, like, when I started, I was, like, a wrestler that, you know, transitioned to, you know, MMA and learned striking and grappling and stuff. And there was a lot of that then, but in today's MMA world, it's, you know, there's kids that they just specialize in MMA. It's mad to see, like, some of the 14-year-olds that come through this gym from different places and how good they actually are.
Fucking absolute beasts here, man. And, like, I think, like, even, because I'm not super savvy with it, but, like, shit's modified, like Muay Thai or kicks for MMA is modified, wrestling for MMA is modified, jiu-jitsu for MMA is modified, striking with your hands is modified, like, and it's, like, its own completely separate thing now, sort of. You can train them all separately, but I feel like...
Yeah, I mean, I agree. To an extent, I feel like that, like, MMA striking is very different from any other type of striking. Yeah.
Well, essentially, like, two lengths away most of the time, aren't you? Like, hand to hand, like,
yeah, hand to hand, for sure. And it's fighting in small gloves is different as, like, you know, you watch, like, ONE Championship, they have, like, really high level MMA or Muay Thai guys in there, and, the level of striking is, like, insane.
Yeah.
But then when you fight, whether it's Muay Thai or MMA, with small gloves, with takedowns, then it changes everything. So, it's very different. And obviously, like, just the, like, you know, you look at someone like Khalil Roundtree that knocked out Gokhan Saki.
Yep.
You would have never, like, I would have never thought that before, you know, I met him. I would have never thought that, like, somebody like that would beat Gokhan Saki at striking. Yeah. But makes a big difference when you have small gloves and it's MMA. So
yeah, no, it's cool. I think it's that's, like, circling back. Like, I think that's when I noticed, like, you guys came in, it was like its own sort of thing, and it was just starting to get, like, wheels. Whereas before it was like no holds barred, fucking crazy soccer kicks in the head and shit. And I feel it was, like, a bit more refined.
Very, very different. In today's world, from when I first started, and from when I first started to you know, back then, it's very different.
When did you start? Obviously from the States, wrestling background and stuff, and then when did you start getting sort of attracted to, like, MMA or striking of any description?
I started wrestling when I was 5, and then I wrestled through, you know, like, grade school, middle school, high school, and then I went to college and wrestled. And I would say right before my senior year of college, which would have been my 5th year, because in sports in America, you have like a redshirt year. So I redshirted my junior year. So my 5th year was my last year of wrestling. And right before that, I went home from school, because most of the time, like, in college sports, if you're on scholarship, like, you're expected to be there most of the time.
Yeah.
Like 11 months out of the year.
Yep.
So after like the summer camps and training and stuff, I went home and Frank was getting ready to come to the same university as a freshman.
Yep.
And his high school wrestling coach opened a gym with his jiu-jitsu black belt right near the beach in our hometown. And he was like, yo, like, come in. And I wanted to, like, break up the monotony of, like, wrestling. So I just, like, I needed to stay in shape for preseason. And, yeah, he was like, come in. And I went in and I did some Muay Thai. I did some jiu-jitsu. And then I went and saw, I want to say it was the first, like, legal pro MMA fight in our state in North Carolina. That's back in 2008, I believe it was.
Yeah, wow.
And, It was crazy. Like, I went and watched it, and I was like, I just fell in love with it. And I saw a kid that I didn't wrestle him, but he grew up wrestling with myself and Frank, and from a different high school. And his brother, I had wrestled his brother before, and I saw him win an amateur fight. And in North Carolina, at least, I don't know now, but back then, the rules were, as an amateur, the only thing you couldn't do that was different between a pro fight and an amateur fight was you couldn't kick in the head and you couldn't elbow.
Yeah. Okay.
But everything else was, like, you know, the same. No, yep. No different gloves, no shin guards, anything.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, I can do this. And then, like, soon as I was finished wrestling my last year in college after the national tournament, I started traveling to. I saw a video of. The guys that did Flow Wrestling used to have an MMA site back in the day. And I saw a video of Dominic Cruz. I didn't know who he was till I saw the video. And he was training at a gym in State College in Pennsylvania.
Yep.
And so I went there like 3 or 4 times for the last like 6 weeks after the national tournament in wrestling.
Yep.
I had like 6 weeks till I graduated, and I used to go there and train. And then I just started training full time when I got home.
Yeah, okay. Fuck. And then, yeah, so you... Just did you, with your wrestling, because you obviously had a really sound base as a wrestler, did you modify your wrestling to suit your striking or to suit your game, like, or did you find it was just applicable straight away?
Before I moved to Atlanta, Georgia, when I went home to, like, where I'm from in Wilmington, North Carolina, I had like a boxing coach and a little bit of, like, learn from like a Muay Thai guy.
Yeah.
And I remember like telling the media, like, before my first amateur fight, like, I was gonna like box and all this stuff, and I threw one jab and took the guy down and ended up TKOing him like quite quickly in the first round because he had no wrestling. So I thought I was gonna do that, but I wouldn't say like I like fell in love with striking until like till I moved to Atlanta, and the Muay Thai coach that I said Manu, he you know, taught me how to kick, taught me how to elbow and punch, and it was different.
Yeah, right. So what did you finished all of your fights from the States before you moved to Thailand?
I think I was like three and maybe 4-1.
Yeah, okay.
I think like 4-1 or something around that.
Oh yeah, because you've fought in like Phoenix and like Bangkok fight nights and shit. Yeah, yeah.
I've never fought in Thailand, but I fought my first fight when I moved here was in Deep in Japan.
Yep.
And then I fought in China numerous times, and I fought in Lebanon. So I think most of my fights were in China once I moved abroad and I moved to Thailand. But I also fought in Japan and Lebanon.
Yeah,
and
right.
Then, yeah, fucking hell. And that was it.
Was it a big contrast between wrestling? Obviously, is a fucking very athletic sport, and obviously MMA is the same. But the actual difference, the contrast of like being punched in the fucking face and shit, was, and the striking side of it, was that a massive like thing for you to adapt to, or you already just had that? You had just that stink in you already?
No, I would say that I was more nervous before wrestling matches.
Oh wow.
Then I wasn't like in MMA, like in wrestling, you have a little bit of time if it's a dual meet in college when you wrestle like one other team to know who you're going to wrestle. But in MMA, you know for like 6 to 8 weeks who you're going to fight. You sign a contract. There's like all this stuff. So it made me much more nervous like going into it compared to wrestling. But then actually when the first fight that I had and all the fights that I had, like I was definitely nervous, but... I would say that like it was just different, you know, like in MMA, like you expect to beat another man because it's a fist fight. Yeah. And wrestling is just wrestling.
Yeah.
But I mean, I don't know if you could look at it that way, but
I know.
Yeah. I don't know. And it, for some reason in MMA, I didn't like the nerves. Like when I was walking out was like, I'm meant to be here and yada, yada, yada. And I also had like in wrestling, I never achieved what I wanted to achieve in college. And MMA was like the way that I could, you know, like rebound that for me.
Yeah. Okay.
And, I don't know. I just, for MMA fights, I was definitely nervous. Don't get me wrong.
Yep.
But not as nervous as I was for wrestling matches.
Yes, that's fucking crazy. That's mad. I find sort of the opposite with because like competitive jiu-jitsu, like I can go into jits matches and I'm like almost too relaxed, where it's like to my detriment.
Right.
In matches where I'm like too casual about it and get beat for doing dumb shit, just not to be. Yeah, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Whereas like, and coming from boxing, like I feel like it made me numb to like, oh, I can't get hit here. Like no one's gonna punch or anything. Or so I was right. Like, yeah, the opposite.
Yeah, it's I don't know. MMA is just like, it's like wrestling has been around for, you know, forever. So long. Man. It's probably the oldest sport.
And, it would be.
I don't know. MMA is just like, you know, it's the crowd. It's more of a show, but you just, I don't know. I always felt like more. Yeah. Relaxed walking to the cage than I did for wrestling matches.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but it was
Did you pursue it purely just for like the sport and the challenge of it all, or was there like a bad guy, badass vibe type thing?
No,
like,
I just literally, I saw that one fight of the kid that I knew, and then I was training just to stay in shape for wrestling before my last year, and I was like, man, I'm kind of okay at this. And to be honest, before my last year of college, I didn't know what I wanted to do. Always thought in the back of my mind, because The Ultimate Fighter came out in 2004, my freshman year. And I was always like, oh, that's cool. Like, maybe I could go into that.
That shit was fucking wild.
But I never, like, you know, put it to the front of my mind.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure what I was going to do. And then, when I started training before my last year of college, I knew, like, when I enjoyed it, and I was like, I'm gonna give this a crack.
Yeah.
And I remember like telling my dad, and he was like, oh, no worries, like, you know, we support you, but you got 6 months once you graduate to figure your stuff out.
What you're doing,
and you can stay at the house, no problem, but you're gonna pay rent. And I was like, okay. And then like I ended up moving like within 3 months to Atlanta and training there and working there. So it was
Frank ever a part of like your fight team and shit, or did he train with you?
Frank cornered me for a few fights like earlier in my career, like my first amateur, one of my amateur fights maybe, and like one or two pro fights. But no, he wasn't like, and he came to Atlanta to train with me when he was in college. And I remember him like coming in for the first time. He was still in college and he was on a break, so he came down to train with like me and some of the other guys. And a couple of the jiu-jitsu guys were like submitting him, and he had no idea. And he came over and he's like, man, what the hell are these guys doing? I was like, bro, like, you know, it's part of like training.
Yeah.
And but now like Frank, you know, he understands jiu-jitsu, he understands striking, he understands everything. But at that time it was quite funny, actually.
Yeah, right. What was the big catalyst that made you want to move to Southeast Asia, or Thailand specifically?
Well, my manager messaged me one time, and he was like, hey, I have this opportunity in Singapore, yada, 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 do you want to take it? And I was like, yeah, and I was stoked for it. And I thought everything was going to, you know, be fine and go through, and it wasn't. And like after a month of thinking I was going, I wasn't going. And I was like, I was pretty upset, you know, because people at like my job, because I thought I was going and I told people that I was leaving and stuff. But I didn't go. And hindsight's 2020, like I'm glad that I didn't go. And on one snowy day when the city was like, of Atlanta was like completely shut down, I didn't have to go into work. And in the car business, you work like every holiday.
Yep.
Rain, snow, sleet, doesn't matter. But this day it was like, it was quite bad, and they canceled, or we didn't have to go to work. And I was on the internet. I remember like hanging out with my roommate, and I saw the Tiger Muay Thai tryouts. And I messaged a few friends that had been there and had like a relationship with them. And
How old were you at this time?
I would have been probably 28.
Yeah, fuck.
27, 28.
Yep.
And
because I remember you won one of those things. Sorry, I'll let you continue your story, but I remember.
Yeah,
you
no,
won one.
It was like I ended up going. I went like a week before thinking I was going to get acclimated, but that was definitely not enough time to get acclimated to the heat. And yeah, I won a scholarship, and not long after that, I was I was the assistant, or I was the wrestling coach and the assistant MMA coach, and then over time, you know, I became the coach and for many years there, and yeah, and that leads us to here.
Yeah. Fucking so. What, like all that shit happened, obviously, and you built a bit of a like a name for yourself and a business and a shit for yourself here. What made you stay, like,
in Thailand?
Yeah. What
I feel like Thailand's. I mean, it's a third world country, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
It's I read this thing one time, like probably the second year I was in Thailand, and it was there's a website, Bangkok Coconuts, and it put this article out, and it was like the. Basically how foreigners think when they come here, like the first step is they come here and they're like in awe of the place, as is everybody that comes here. And then the second phase is they start to see things that, you know, kind of they don't agree with or annoy them. And then the third phase is like they either get over it and they stay or they leave.
Yeah.
And I remember riding around on a motorbike the first and second week I was here. And I was like, I don't want to leave this place. And I had some Thai friends in the States and stuff before. Yep. So I knew a little bit about the culture and I could say a few words, but just like driving around the first couple of weeks I was here and seeing like the sights, smelling, like sometimes you'll like smell something that's just terrible smelling.
Fucked up,
riding around on a motorbike, but then you like smell something that's good. And I was just remembering like, man, I don't want to leave this place.
Yep.
And it just like all everything worked out, you know, like I ended up getting a job at that gym and the rest is history.
Fuck, that's cool. Did you and if it's okay to talk about it, did you meet your wife and stuff here?
Yeah. My wife, she used to come to Tiger where I was working at, and her father used to own like a Muay Thai gym in Bangkok for many years. And then they moved here and they opened a stadium, and she would come to Tiger with her brother looking for, you know, like some of the trainers at the gym at that time were from her dad. And they would come and look for fighters, and I was, you know, obviously attracted to her. And then I would go there and watch the fights, and then like one of my friends showed me her Instagram and Facebook, and the rest is history. Yeah. That's, you know, a couple of nice cheeky photos you have there.
And did she train, or does she train, or used to? Or?
She used to hit pads and stuff. Yeah, she still trains. She does her fitness classes and stuff here.
Oh, cool.
But yeah, we have two kids now as well, so.
Changes things.
Yeah, it definitely changes things. Yeah. But no, she does the fitness classes and trains, and she doesn't really hit pads anymore, but yeah.
Do you think your kids will fight? Are they interested in it? I suppose they're exposed to the environment all the time, but.
We call it the East East in my house.
What's that mean?
East East.
Oh, East East. Yeah.
So.
Born to be fighters.
I have a daughter and a son, and I think I want my daughter to definitely train so that she can defend herself, but I don't expect her to compete or want her to compete or anything like that. And to be honest, like if she doesn't want to train, like, okay.
Yeah.
You know, as long as she does something. And my son, but I wouldn't be surprised if my daughter, because she keeps asking me when the extension of the gym is done, she calls it Baby Bung Tao Gym. When is it going to be finished? So I keep telling her like it's in the process. So maybe she will train. But I have a son as well. I don't care. I mean, honestly, like if they love something else, as long as they do something, I'm okay with that. But it would definitely be cool. And I would take like a step back as a dad. I would try to, you know, stay away and let my brother coach him. You know, the Thai guy. I want, if my son does fight, I want him to kick like a Thai.
Yeah.
To elbow like a Thai, clinch like a Thai. But wrestle and jujitsu like a foreigner.
Yeah.
And like if he fights, great. But if he doesn't fight, no worries.
Yeah, and that's sort of why I asked, because I know like, the Thai culture is very much like it. It's like the parents are very forceful with the direction that their kids go. I feel like it's more of a modern way of thinking about it now, where there's because there's fucking 10-year-old millionaires on TikTok. Like,
yeah, it's the world is very different now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, even if he wants to fight and train, I'm not gonna like. I mean, I say this now, but like, you know, I want him to like. I don't want him to do hard sparring or like, you know, be fighting Muay Thai every week or something like that. Like, I don't want him, you know, I want to watch out for his health, but
yeah.
I want him to train and be competitive and, you know,
yeah. Yeah.
Whatnot. If he does do it, like he's got to do it, you know, full on, but
I think it like even just training it like teaches you a whole lot of shit, like discipline, respect.
Oh, for sure.
Tolerance, control your emotions. Like it teaches you a whole much more than just fighting, man.
I agree 100%. Mm. You know, my dad turned me on to wrestling when I was 5 and my brother the same. And my dad was, you know, in America, there's a lot of like psycho, like, I don't know, baseball dads, you could say, you know, they want them. They, yeah. Everyone thinks their son is the next.
The ones
know,
that scream on the sidelines.
Yeah, those scream fucking, on the sidelines. They yeah. think their kid is the next big deal.
The dude from the 616 the other
yeah,
day.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But I, my dad was always great with us and he never like pushed me. It, like he pushed us, but it was always like if we wanted to do it. If we had to do something, whether it was wrestling or academics or whatever it was.
To commit to something.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But he was never like a baseball dad. He was never a psycho. And that's the way that I hope that I am with my son and I expect to be. And to be fair, I know like kids, they, like my daughter, I can try to get her to swim, you know, 1,000 times, but then somebody else shows her and she does exactly what they say. So
yeah,
I'm okay with other people like taking care of my kids and coaching them. And I'm lucky because I have my brother and I have some of my closest friends here. So
yeah. Tell me about the brainchild that is Bung Tao, Muay Thai, MMA. Like, I spoke to Alex last night and it was like, I think you guys were spitballing it for a long time, and then what was that catalyst that
I would say I got here in 2014, and by the end of 2014, like it was like a, you know, like one day let's open our gym, like Alex, Woody, myself, my brother wasn't here at this point, and a few other people, and it always like, you know, we always wanted to open our own gym. And honestly, man, I remember like yesterday, like being during COVID, I think the gym had closed for the second or third time, and we were training in Alex's like front yard.
Show me
and,
the videos. I gotta get some of that footage for this film I'm doing. Yeah,
yeah, it's definitely different. Man, that's for sure.
Fucking and way different.
They was like getting ready, like Loma was getting ready for UFC fights, and I remember Alex being like, "Yo, come, you got time tonight? Come back at like, you know, 6:30 or 7 or whatever it was." And I was like, "Well, yeah, it's COVID, so there was nothing going on."
Yeah.
And that's like the first night he was like the driving force of, you know, from Alex the beginning. Like he, you know, he was the one that was like, "Yo, this is the time." And you know, there were other people at that time involved, and those people doing it out, and it's, you know, Alex, Frank, and Woody and myself initially. And then, you know, we went through investors and properties, and yeah, he was the driving force. Like, you know, we've all had our arguments, and you know, there's many more arguments to come, I'm sure, but the good thing is like we're all very close friends, and we all know, like every single one of us know what we're good at and what we're not good at, and like,
and you balance
for me, especially for me, like the things that Alex is good at is not what I'm good at, and we all need each other, you know, so it worked out great. You know, Alex found the properties, help find investors, like everything. It was everything that went wrong could have gone wrong, but here we are, man. And it's insane, honestly, to think about.
How hard is it to like be a group of foreigners with money trying to buy well, you can never own land here, I think, can you, or whatever, you know what I mean,
yeah,
like how hard is it rather than like you're trying to do this in the States?
It's easier and harder. It's it's like, it's definitely different doing business. Like, it's a different culture, you know? So, but the good thing is like Alex, myself, you know, some of our investors, like, you know, we understand Thai culture and stuff like that. So it makes things easier. but it's still not easy.
No.
But definitely, like, you know, the dollar goes a lot further over here.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's different. It's definitely very different.
What were some of the, if you're okay to talk about, and the biggest hardships you had with the whole transition? Well, the transition out obviously would have been hard to move into here, but some of the hardships with, like, getting this place up and going, because Alex explained to me that, like, there was shit getting finished, like, the night before the open day and shit.
Oh, I mean, literally, there was stuff getting finished, like, an hour and a half before the first seminar of the grand opening, because the grand opening was, like, 2 days. We had a seminar on Friday, Saturday morning, and then, you know, like, the actual opening and party Saturday night.
Mm-hmm.
And literally, like, 45 minutes, an hour before the first seminar, like, this stuff just got finished, and they were, like, taking tools out of here. there was all kinds of hardships throughout the process, you know, finding land, getting land, thinking we had it and didn't have it, finding investors backing out. Like, it was very surreal. It was very
fucking hard,
weird. I learned a lot.
Yeah.
But here we are, and everything's, you know, like, we're, I say this to people all the time. I thought that we would be successful, but I thought it would take a lot longer than what it has taken.
Yep.
And yeah, I mean, I attribute it to the people that are involved, you know, like, not me, but the rest of the guys. And yeah, we're very lucky to be where we're at.
Well, it goes to show, because there's, like, a lot of people that I seen in the videos at Alex's place training and stuff that's still training here now.
Oh yeah,
like,
for sure.
Like, years later. Well, not that long later. It's a couple of years later.
Yeah, a year and a half.
A year and a half later, yeah.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, maybe a year and
I think
half.
I missed your 1 year thing the last time I see you by about, like, a week or two. Because you had it in May or something, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was my question? Oh, my next question was, what, how did you, because there's a lot of referencing a lot of, like, the high-level professional guys, and you feed a lot of high-level guys into, like, a world, like, an international, semi-international circuits. How did you, Frank, the gym, build that level of sort of high-level coaching and, like, that, can't think of the right word, Jesus Christ, too late at night. Fuck me. You know what I mean? Like, people, like, hear the Hickmans and they're like, oh, epic MMA coaches. Like, how did you get to there?
Frank messaged me or called me. Probably 2016, 2017. And this is just us. This isn't, and I'll get to all of us, but
yeah,
he just messaged me and was like, I'm tired of working in the car business, because that's what we both did before we moved here. And he was like, I'm going to sell my Corvette and I'm going to move to Thailand and we're going to coach and I'm going to help you fight. But that was like, he came right at my last fight.
Yep.
And it's just like, you know, that's how, like, I think him coming here, because before I would hashtag and put photos up. We had a Hickman Brothers Instagram.
Yep.
But when he moved here, that's when it, like, really kicked off.
Yeah.
And then obviously him being employed by, you know, City Kickboxing to help Israel and some of the other boys. And then obviously with Volkanovski, we started catching wind and things were growing. And then that's, you know, at MMA and Tiger, you know, with him and I and Alex, it was like you know, that was like the squad of coaches.
Mm.
So moving here and just kind of like transitioned.
And then snowballed off.
Yeah, and snowballed. Like, yeah. I didn't expect for us to, you know, to have Wei Li and,
man,
and
that's crazy.
All these fighters that we've had come through. I mean, I remember, you know, in the first couple of months of being opened, you know, jiu-jitsu was like the big class, and it still is the big class. But, like, you know, there'd be like, if there was 25 in jiu-jitsu, maybe there'd be like 15 in MMA.
Mm.
And I remember Woody, like, saying to me one time, like, yo, like, we got to get more fighters. But now, I don't know, it's just caught wind, and it's,
man,
it's, again, the facilities here and the coaches, not myself, but the rest of the coaches, like, it's just a world-class coaching staff.
Yeah.
And a lot of experience. And, man, we're just like normal guys, you know, like,
that's what I like about it.
We get to literally talk shit every day.
Yeah, and do what you
and,
love.
And do what we love. And what, you know, it's just banter all day long and awesome. Do what we love. So it's not it's not work, you know?
Yeah, I really enjoyed here. Like, I felt welcome from the first 10 seconds I walked through the door last time I was here. It's fucking epic.
That's something that, sorry. That's
no, there you go.
That's something that, like, I think that all of us are proud of, you know? Like, we get on with everybody. Like, we talk shit with everybody. Doesn't matter what country you're from, what language you speak, whether you speak English or not, you know? We try to interact with people because it's cool, you know? Like,
man, there's a lot of different people from different cultures and different backgrounds and shit and different stories. Like, it's fucking crazy. I could run this podcast, like, 5 times a day for the next 10 years.
Right, with the people that are here and where they're from. And, yeah, it's very different. So it's pretty cool to be able to do that on a daily basis.
Yeah, reputation was the word I was looking for, the most basic word in English language. Fucking, yeah, so, like, I guess, like, your world, you and Frank, referencing like the Hickman brothers, you guys are like world renowned MMA coaches. Like, to get to that level, like, it feels like there's like a gap there between what you guys are doing and we're doing to that point where, like, you guys are involved with like Izzy and like Volk and like all those, you've had those high level guys pass through. And I guess that gap's probably not as big as I see it as that big. You know
what I mean? Like, I've known Israel for a long time. Like, it's cool the connection that we all have. Like, because Brad and myself and Woody and Alex, Brad, we used to all coach at Tiger back in the day.
Yeah.
And that's how I got to know Izzy and Eugene, the coach, and everybody else.
Gotcha.
And I could never go over because I was, you know, the head coach at Tiger. But when my brother came, it was perfect. You know, he started going over it, and that's, you know, helped build us a lot. Yeah. So,
how did you with coaching? It's obviously vastly different from actually training and fighting. Like, how did you learn to develop as a coach? Like, were you shit at the start of it? Like, or did you learn from somebody? Like,
I don't know if I was shit, but like, when I came to Tiger, Roger Huerto was he was the guy, and I became his assistant. And I remember actually, like, at you asking that, I remember one time when I first started coaching, or when he asked me to show something, I remember being like, man, what am I, like, what can I give these Russian guys from Dagestan and Chechnya? Because there were a lot of them.
Yeah.
And
still is.
Yeah, still is. And I just thought, like, after, like, some time of, like, you know, doing a couple sessions and stuff, like, in America, like, we have the same takedowns as every other country in the world, but our style of wrestling is different. So I like, you know, the rules are different. You can't lock hands like in freestyle on top.
Yeah.
If you're on bottom, you can't lay there. You have to get up and get away. So that was like the thing at first that I was confident about. And, just over time, like, you know, once Frank came, like, I was already comfortable then, but just over time, you get confident and you get comfortable, and
you know
what you have to offer people. And it was it was weird, you know, like, I never expected to go to different countries with fighters and stuff like that. But then, you know, people start asking you. Frank was traveling with, you know, the guys from City, and just like one thing led to another. And
it's weird how that this is one of those industries where it shit is exactly like that. Like,
It's strange.
Yeah, like the networking. And I guess the gap isn't that far. Like, there's guys here that, like, just everyday people, and they're one fight away from, like, a UFC, potential UFC or 1FC contract, you know what I mean? Like,
for sure. It's crazy. For sure. I mean, it's everything, like, us being here now and opening this gym, the four of us plus our investors, this is, like, just all of this is through contacts that we've met over the years, and this is what has led us to this point. You know, it's just like contacts that we've made over the years, and organizations, friends, like everything. It's pretty insane to think about.
Man, yeah, it blows me away that, like, the progression and, like, even the size of the gym now, and it's not even 2 years old. It's fucking insane.
It is insane, man. To like to really think about it. Like, I don't think about it that often.
No,
I don't. I love what I do, so I don't think about, like, you know, obviously I think about how many people are here and stuff like that, but like, I don't think about like, oh, it's cool that we open a gym and this, you know, this and that. Like, I worry about, you know, the fighters that we have and the guests and stuff like that. But it's pretty insane to think that, you know, we've opened this and to see where we're going to go with it.
What's your long-term plans with all of this? Like, do you have like a, I guess not an end goal, but like, where do you want to take it as far as it'll go, I assume, but like, what does that look like?
I have no idea.
Yeah.
I think just like four good friends with some other good friends in the background have opened a gym, and we do what we love on a daily basis, whether it's jiu-jitsu or MMA or fitness. And obviously we do what we love, but we have, you know, fighters, whether it's Muay Thai or fitness, oh, sorry, whether it's Muay Thai or MMA. And I don't know. I don't know where it's going to go, but I'm keen to find out. But there's no, like, end game. There's no, like, if we sold this thing for $1 trillion, which is obviously ridiculous, but I would still be, like, I would want to have a contract. Like, can I still coach? Like, yeah. Maybe I wouldn't be holding pads as much and stuff. But I would still want to have like a big part in the gym, you know, like I love being here every day. Like sometimes my wife will be like, message me and say, you know, when are you going to be home? And I'll say 15 minutes, but I don't get home for like almost an hour because this person's talked to me and then I feel like I have to talk to that person. And it's just like so on, you know, it's just like literally we do what we love and we get to talk to people all day long.
What's it like? I struggle with this, explaining things, and I'm only like nobody in the fight game. You know when people come up to you and you're like, why the fuck do you fight? Like, why do you like getting punched in the face? How do you like deliver an answer from someone who doesn't fight, that doesn't understand? I can't.
You mean you can't tell someone?
I can't explain it to someone where they actually understand what the fuck.
Oh.
Like why? Well, yeah, you know what I mean?
I guess I like training now because it's a part of my life.
Yeah.
And I go through spells where I don't train, but I'm back on it now four days in a row. And Brad's been giving me shit, so
it's fucking, so I'm back. He's been bullying the shit out of you.
But I feel better that he's made me come back.
Yeah.
But no, like, as a former fighter, I think that for me, I think everyone fights for different reasons. Like, mm-hmm. Brad is a prime example of a guy that literally loves fighting. He likes getting punched in the face. He likes punching somebody else back. And that's him. Like, he genuinely loves fighting. I was the type of person, when I was in the cage or the ring, like, I didn't necessarily enjoy being in there and punching the guy and getting punched back. Like, I was competitive, very competitive.
Yeah.
And I would say that's why I did it. I was very competitive. And the thought of making a lot of money and being famous was cool to me. And every time that I won, that was like a natural high that, you know, I could get from nowhere else. But that was the only reason. That was the only reason that I fought. And again, Brad's like one of those guys that's like a natural fighter. He loves fighting. Yeah. He enjoys being in there.
He's one of those people I'm nervous around. Like, he's a super nice, funny dude. Oh, and super.
He's a phenomenal guy, but he's also very,
like,
scary.
Yeah, he's like, I don't know. He's just got that vibe where, like, if you said the wrong thing, like, and he's got he's a super, I think he's the same age as me. I think we're born the same year.
He's, how old is that?
91 babies, I think. 32.
Okay.
Yeah. I feel old.
Yeah, I definitely do, because I'm about to be 38.
Oh, well, you're but not even 40 yet.
No, not 40. I'm 38.
Killing it, man.
But no, he's a guy that he loves being in there. Yeah. He loves the moment. He loves like spitting blood out or like hitting the other guy and making him bleed.
He's got a face that looks like he enjoys that.
Yeah, that was not me. So,
yeah, right. No, it's cool. How have you seen like the MMA game now? Like, a lot of it's turned into like, it always has been entertainment. Anything that's televised is, I suppose, but like it's turned into a lot more flair now.
Yeah, it's definitely more, like. Oh, it's the social media age.
Yeah, okay.
Like, everything, like, you know. I mean, it's true. You have to be an MMA. Like, if you want to make a lot of money, be yourself. But you have to be seen. You have to be known, you know? Like,
and you have to be a little bit controversial, I feel.
Yeah, controversial, yeah. Whether you have a shtick or not. Like, you have to set yourself apart from 95% of the other people to actually be, like, you know, a big name or whatever you want to call it. But yeah, it's the entertainment business. So
yeah, with coaching, do you think like you've had to adapt to the changes in MMA from like an entertainment and management perspective, and from like a skills and how you teach perspective?
Well,
have you had to change?
I don't manage people, so that's not my gig.
You sort of like, do though. You know what I mean? Like
in a way, but not
really. Manage people through promotions, but like manage people.
Yeah, but
people.
I feel like most fighters in today's world, they know like what they have to do. You have to be good at social media.
Because the information is readily available.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. But yeah, that's like a good thing and a bad thing, you know? Like it's more of a popular contest and whatnot, but you obviously have to have the skill to back it up. But yeah, I don't think that's like something that it just is. It's the times now, so it's not like something that I have to like talk to
like
fighters
think
or go
about it.
Yeah, I don't really think about it. Like everyone, you know, everyone knows like most of the fighters at our gym, whether they're male or female, they're, you know, doing their social media and doing this and doing that, and it just is part of the times.
Do you is there a preference for you with like fighters and stuff? Are you happy to coach sort of anyone start to finish, or are you trying to, because I'm referencing like the gym being very transient.
Oh yeah.
There's obviously locals here that like that train here regularly and people that have moved here and all that sort of stuff, but there's people here that for like a month and all that sort of stuff. Like how do you find balancing, because those people that are here for a month might just be here for a camp and they're still 100% committed to the cause. So whereas like, I don't know, like how do you manage that with like local fighters that you see every day and ones that you see for a month and then they're gone for another 12 months sort of thing?
Well, for me, like every gym in Thailand, it's like Las Vegas. There's like fighters that, you know, whatever organization is, whatever organization is, they stay in that city. So like in Las Vegas, like a lot of UFC or PFL, the fighters stay in Las Vegas. And it's very similar to here. It's a transient place. There's, you know, this gym, a few other gyms in Chulong. And same way in Vegas, there's, you know, one gym on one side, one gym on the other. And there's a lot of, in this gym, there's a lot of tourists, which probably aren't in those places. And if you do a class, you know, we're all going to help you. Every coach, I would imagine,
yeah,
is going to help you the same way, you know, whether you're here, whether we know you're here for a day or you're here for a year, it doesn't matter. We're going to help you. But obviously with like fighters, it's a bit different. And we know who's coming through. We know who's going to try to stay. So,
yeah, okay.
Obviously the fighters that are here and want to stay long-term, we're going to help them probably a little bit more.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of fighters that come here for a week or 2 weeks or a month and we'll help them the same way. But obviously, we're not invested. We don't, you know, watch their fights. We don't do this. We don't do that. So,
do you think like if a UFC fighter or one, like a, anyway, but like a high level world class guy or the UFC or ONE FC came here and said like we want to put fighters here permanently and make this like a permanent thing, like, and or we want you to train this specific fighter, do you think that you would be willing to sacrifice your like your regular privates that you do with like everyday people and your classes and stuff to train those sort of people, or would you?
Well, it's more like, you know, fighters, they come here, like everyone pays to come here.
Yeah.
So they come, and if they want to have extra attention, then, you know, whether they do privates or whether it's like a fighter that, if it's a fighter that stays here like long term,
mm-hmm.
then yes, of course, we'll help them because we know they have to start out at a certain level. But it's just very easy to, you know, tell the difference between like people that are here for 1 or 2 weeks and people that are going to stay here. Because the people that stay long term, you know, and are fighting out of the gym, they're, you know, our fighters, or they train here. So obviously we have a very close and, you know, intimate relationship with them. It's very different.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess I just think of like the question that was built around like what Frank does with Izzy or Volk or whatever, like he's here for a period of time and he's the head wrestling coach, is my understanding of it.
Yeah.
Because I haven't, every time I'm here, he's away. So, so then he obviously
teaching wrestling, and I assume it's like a program sort of thing, you know, where they're like teaching a technique and developing a certain run of things, and then he has to shoot off for a month or 2 months or three months for a fight camp or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, is that something, I guess it's a question for Frank, but is it sustainable? Like, is it?
Yeah, yeah. He's the, you know, he's one of the owners here. He's the head wrestling coach, and he's here most of the time, but he, like, first, like, he's gone away with Volk for 2.5 weeks. It's now when he goes, it's, you know, 2-3 weeks maximum, and that's it. It's not, you know, multiple times. Yeah. And he's hired by, whether it's Israel or whether it's Volkanovski, you know, they bring him in as a coach and a training partner. So.
Yep. Oh, yeah, because he's still, like,
he's getting fully amongst it all the time.
I've seen a fair few videos. Yeah, and I was curious because, like, that's obviously, like, you're obviously in the same sport, but it's very different, like, when you're talking... teaching classes with 20, 25, 30, 35 people, and then going, giving specific teaching to like a super high level guy.
Yeah, that's like when he leaves here, like he does privates, just, you know, we all do privates, we all teach class, but when he leaves here, it's like, you know, for specific reasons, it's helping Volk or it's helping Israel. Mm. So it's very much like they've hired him to come in.
Yeah, okay. Do you want a piss break?
And it's the boys.
Oh, it's the boys.
Yeah, I'll take a piss break.
Yeah.
One of my Asian friends back in America that I first started training with, he was telling me about it. He knew all the fighters and stuff. He's like, oh, you're fighting this guy? But it's not like a massive promotion or anything, but it was like really cool experience because the fight was in the Saitama Center, like where Pride used to be. And I lost a split decision. And yeah, I mean, it was like, it is what it is. Like, I could care less about that now. And it was cool to fight there. It was a great experience. But I've also been back there many, many times cornering people.
Yep.
And that's a better experience. Because I can eat and I can do it, go out and party, like whatever.
Yep.
But no, it was like, Japan is, outside of Thailand, it's my second favorite country. Like I love Bangkok. I love Thailand. I love Phuket, obviously. But Japan is like the next place I would want to go. I could, it's incredible.
Yeah, I've trained over there and traveled there a fair bit, and it's very different, but it's like, yeah, it feels heap safe. And
yeah, I mean, you could like leave your iPhone on the corner of the street and it would be there like 2 days later. Like,
people come up and like check on you, man, and like they'll see you in an airport or a train station, and they'll like come up and like try and speak English to you, and like where are you going, and like help you with maps. Or
it's a very different experience.
Yeah, it's crazy. So circling back around to like specific fights, is there any like memorable shit, good or bad, like in any fights that have sort of stuck with you, shit that was said? Like, do people fucking talk much,
like while you're like actually opponents? In
there? Yeah, like were you fighting and shit or not really?
I think I had one opponent when I was still in America in Atlanta like talk shit to me, but it wasn't a lot, and I couldn't tell you anything. That I remember him like talking shit
going off,
but no. But I've had guys like talk shit before wrestling to me, and I've been on both ends where I've lost the match and won the match. But it definitely takes you out of your game, you know. It definitely like
gets in your
head. It can take you out of the game, like if you let it. But and I've been on both sides of that. But yeah, no, never in fighting that I can remember, like something too ridiculous. But I definitely had somebody, you know, say something during a fight.
Yeah, I think it's crazy. Like, I just, the biggest one that sort of sticks in my memory is like Masvidal, how he just like walks along and just talks constantly through his fights. And it's like, he'll never ever tell you what he said in the post-fight interviews or anything like that. It's fucking, that sort of shit's crazy.
I'm a fan of Masvidal.
You like him?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like him. He's like, I like those like car park fighters.
And he's like an old school car park fighter, but also at the same time, like, he had skill.
Yeah, man.
And it's cool to see what he did, like, at the end of his career, you know, to make himself as famous as he did. Yeah.
He punched a piss out of Nate Diaz, man.
Yeah, he's...
He's
in front of 305, eh?
Fuck. What was I going to ask? Oh, I think, like, yeah, so I keep interrupting the conversation with my own fucking little thoughts, but specific fights that shit's happened... that's like memorable to you, or even like post-fight, like after parties, anything like anything that's memorable.
When I got knocked out in 7 seconds, I remember going to the restaurant next to my condo I lived in Atlanta, Yeah. And I had to drive my girlfriend. She was Thai, actually, in America. And we drove there, and we ate with, like, my parents and my coach. And I had chicken wings and quite a few Samuel Adams. And I remember my mom being like,
fuck, I haven't heard that in a long time, man.
What the fuck happened? Like, how did you get knocked out? My mom's, like, the most, like, Christian lady ever. So yeah, it was like it was funny. It was that was a very weird experience because I got knocked out, and like my mom, you know, my parents didn't ever think they were gonna have to witness that, but they did.
Yeah,
so something. It was a very strange experience.
It's I find just made me think of like Christianity in America is fucking crazy because there's Christians that like especially like. Sort of the South and or your
oh,
sort
yeah.
of, yeah, like they drink and they smoke and they swear and they do bad shit, but they're also like highly religious, which I find is weird. Like in Australia, it's very opposite. Like,
yeah, there's, I mean, I guess it's just like with anything, there's like good people and bad people.
Yeah.
But like, I remember the first church I went to, you know, it was a Southern Baptist church, and my dad was an atheist and my mom was very religious. But my dad was very smart. He had read the Bible multiple times and stuff. But it was the only time he would come to the church was to see my brother and I in like some kind of like church event.
Yeah, right.
And yeah, it was just like funny. It was a Southern Baptist church, and a preacher had stole money from it and stuff. But then, like you know, the church we went to after that with my mom, like I still go there occasionally if I go back. Not that I'm the most religious person by any means, but
yep.
Like yeah, I you know I took my child there and my wife and whatnot, but yeah,
done the thing. What's the I've been meaning to ask you this for fucking ages, the necklaces, man. Is that
this is I love when Thai guys come around and they have a magnifying glass that like flips out and they look at my Buddhas, because in Thailand it's like amulets are very they're not I guess exactly Buddhas, but they're Long Paul, which is like a different monk at temples and stuff, but they're like a few very famous ones.
Yeah, okay.
But not that mine are famous by any means. But I just like when Thai guys come around and they're like checking them out and whatnot.
Yeah, wow. So they're Buddhist, or is it?
Yeah, these are like they're people at Buddhist temples. They're monks.
So how did you get those three?
My wife's father gave me this. My friend Kunpan in America gave me that, and Lamsam Krong Chuantana gave me that one.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, I see you wearing them all the time, and then I've just never asked you what they are.
Yeah.
What's do they have religious significance to you, or you just they have like sentimental significance, or both?
Yeah, I'm just like. Not religious, but you know, whatever religion they're to me, as long as you're a good person, all good. But I like them, and I honestly like when Thai guys come up and use a magnifying glass to check out my Buddhas. But I wear them all the time, so they just, I guess, become. I want to wear them all the time now.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Yeah, I was just curious.
It's quite funny.
I didn't know that like Thai guys had come and like.
No, in Thailand it's like these are not expensive by any means. But in Thailand, like people, you know, they sell them for like a lot of money. Some can be a lot of money, some can be very cheap, but it's like Thai guys, like a lot of Thai people wear amulets, and a lot of Thai guys have these like little glass magnifying glasses that like flip out, and they'll check it out and they can read like the back, because it's if they're older, they're in like, you know, it's hard to read. So it's wherever it's from and what monk it is and stuff like that. So.
That's crazy.
Fuck. Very interesting.
That is, man. That's weird. That's, yeah, I find that.
But I do it solely for the magnifying.
Solely for the Thai guys fucking sussing you out. What's, happy to wrap this thing up. So what's next for George Hickman? What's next moves?
Just day to day at the gym and, you know, the upcoming fights we have, Jada fights in Bali in July.
Yeah, I'm going to try my hardest to make that. I'd love to.
Her and Ken. BDK.
He is fighting. It is. I didn't know.
He's making his amateur debut.
Fuck yeah.
Jada's fighting. And then in August, we have Peter, the half Thai, half Danish kid.
Yep.
And he'll be fighting. So, yeah.
Yeah. And they're all very talented fighters. Like, Ken's come on. Like, even I think I've seen progression in Ken from when I was here in April or March, April to now, which is end of June, July.
Yeah, he's a legend, mate. He's half Thai, half German, and trains every day, does multiple private lessons a day, does multiple classes a day.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe I saw him in the gi class tonight when I first showed up.
Man, I think I was here when he got his blue belt. I was here the night he got his blue belt when Hingham was here, Josh.
Yeah, he's a legend.
Fuck, he's a good kid.
His parents are awesome because they just like, it's him, he has two twin brothers that are like 2 years younger than him, and then a baby sister. And their parents, you know, they school them, they teach them about business, and obviously the kids train a lot, and it's pretty cool.
That's fucking pretty cool. Sick. There's actually some really, like, Ebi, like, there's some really talented young people here, eh? Like,
oh, for sure. It's pretty cool, like, the last, like, you know, we haven't been open long, but the, you know, the people that we have come through on a daily basis, but the, like, little core of people that are here full-time, it's pretty cool.
It's a special place. Cool. Yeah, so just going to keep chipping away and nothing crazy coming up or...
Yeah, nothing crazy, just finish construction and...
Yeah, true,
and,
that's not...
You know, nothing, smash the rest of the fights out that we have and just keep doing our thing.
Going to come back and do a Masters fight one
do,
day?
Do a what?
Going to take another fight before 40?
Nah, that...
Done?
That's all she wrote. I can say I don't want that anymore.
Nah, done. Family man now.
Brother, grappling or sparring... I can feel my ego just training in the class. I'm all good. I have no desire to do
no
that
more
anymore.
No 3 month camp.
Nope. Nope.
No more highballs.
No more highballs. Not at all.
Thanks heaps for your time, man. I really, really appreciate everything. And yeah, I look forward to seeing what the gym's got to come on in the future.
Sounds good, brother. Awesome. Thank you.
Appreciate it, man.